Area, episode 548 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, and I know you've been waiting for it, you know, I've been talking about it, but yes, we can finally welcome the return of Bronze Thumb.
And this is Bronze Thumb from Australia, and I've returned.
Yes, you have. All right.
Well, practice, apparently.
Just slightly. It's been a while, so what you been up to?
Well, went overseas for a little while. Tell a lot of people about it because it was that was fun. And then since I got back, been catching up on things, basically.
Yeah, I can hear you.
I'm finally caught up on.
Yes, and as usual, you know, we have the fun now that Bronze Thumb is back of little minor lags and glitches thanks to the friendly interwebs of Australia. We will, of course, endure. Yes. So anyway, for Bronze Thumb's benefit, as well as everybody else's, we, of course, have slightly shifted our formatting here. And the first show is typically the genre news of the week, although this list is a little shorter than the last month and a half has been. So we might go right from that into our best and lowest scored shows of the week, the top three and the bottom three. And then we usually get into all the other shows in whatever depth we therefore wish to get into. But yeah, it's good to have you back, Bronze Thumb, and your scores definitely changed a few things for us in terms of at least shaking up the top shows this week. The bottom shows, not so much.
Wait a minute, did you say Bronze Thumb's back?
I did.
I was speechless. I just couldn't get over it. I missed them. Go figure.
I'm shocked too.
Well, Edmund, before we get into anything else, I think there's something you're supposed to do.
Sure. Also, Dan, just in case Bronze Thumb has forgotten this, our policy here is to talk about anything and everything that might have happened in the news, in the world, and certainly in the episodes we discuss, so you will be nastily, horribly spoiled. But as always, we try and give you a week or so to catch up before we do that to you.
That's right, and as I said, we're going to jump right into the genre news of the week, and I believe, Gary, you are the first one up, and this is news that is near and dear, I'm sure, to your DC heart.
Oh, yeah, I'm really thrilled about it. Not quite the twist I was hoping for, but at the same time, I'm still not disappointed. What we're talking about is Flash news. Thankfully, it's not our normal casting news so much as character news. During the recent Paley Fest in Los Angeles, the Flash showrunner, Greg Berlanti, I think, or Berlanti, mentioned the fact that we are going to see more members of the Flash family. We're not quite sure if it's going to be Wally West or Bart Allen, but there is a plan to bring at least one of those people into our universe. And while we haven't talked about the show yet, I think the Flash show will definitely be going places where you could easily see Descendants show up.
Yeah, we'll be getting into that a little bit more.
Yeah, that's about as much as I wanted to say, even with that next warning. So,
exactly.
It's really cool. You know, there are a lot of different Flashes that tie into continuity, and it seems in the past 20 years they probably quadrupled, or if not more so, the number of quote Flash people, and it's made for a bit of a more layered universe. And I have to say, they do manage with Flashes typically to not sort of overwhelm you the way that, say, a Green Lantern Corps might overwhelm you with so many people of the same powers. They really do manage to make the characters unique, and I hope they carry that through into the TV show.
You mean not everybody's a runner and going fast like everyone's an archer?
Yeah, but not all of them wear red and yellow.
Sometimes. Oh, okay.
Oh, see, there you go.
Yeah. Yes, that's certainly far better news than what is being perhaps indicated by a certain David Lynch. Yes, I'm sure that everyone remembers the exciting news that Twin Peaks may be coming to Showtime in 2016 as a limited series, but apparently there's a little bit of doubt. During a Q&A event about a week ago, maybe two, David Lynch was saying that... After an attendee asked whether Twin Peaks was definitely happening, he responded with, "I don't know. There are complications." Now, let's be fair here.
Did he say it backwards?
Literally. All he said, and yes, it may have been backwards. It's quite possible he was doing it while sitting on a horse with a midget. I don't know. But it's definitely very little information for anyone to be going on, but the panic was palpable out there because basically during another story, Lynch gave a completely conflicting statement about the resurrection of Twin Peaks. He didn't cast more doubt, but he didn't confirm it's going to happen. He basically said, I haven't returned yet, and we're still working on the contract. So, yeah, considering that that Showtime had a whole event and walked out Kyle MacLachlan as returning as Agent Cooper and made this big deal about it, I don't know if maybe it's simply a matter of getting everybody who needs to be signed on, or what. But maybe David Lynch I don't know. He's very interesting in the way he approaches his stuff. This could very well be a little bit of reverse psychology or reverse speech, as you say. Who knows? I don't. Bronze Thumb, save me with another news item.
I can probably do that. Greg Berlanti and Andrew got this. it's being planned. It's all very nebulous right now. And what it's been Paley Fest this week, and they've been talking to some people about it, and not saying a lot, just sort of talking more about vibe and style than anything concrete about what content of the show is going to be. Greg Berlanti told EW that the spinoff it honors all of the great team-up movies, whether it's Ocean's 11 or whether it's the superhero books. That's what it's about. If you go back to the old westerns, there would be The Lone Gunman, but there would also be The Magnificent Seven. It's very much in the spirit of those kinds of movies and shows. Meanwhile, about the role that Sarah Lance might play on the show, and about how the spin-off, this sort of team-up spin-off series would be, it would add another leg to the tripod and complete it. We'll get to see some of the characters that we've seen, and introduce a whole bunch of new characters and show them all in a different way, and have the show really feel different. As different as Flash feels from Arrow, this new show will feel different from both of them. in the news article on comicbook.com, they speculate that with this series, it would sort of put a... From what Kreisberg was saying, this might mean that after this spinoff, they'll probably not be developing any new shows in the universe for a while. Going by the tripod comments, and so it's still, this thing is still incredibly vague. There's been talk about who might be in it, who they'd like to put in it. I tend to pick up things in trade paperbacks or whatnot when I do get stuff, so I have no idea how. I have no idea if the kind of show that they're putting together is a specific adaptation or something like that of some specific comic thing, or if they're just taking all these elements from the shows they've already got and saying, well, this is cool, we want to see more of this, and Arrow and Flash aren't necessarily the vehicle for them, so let's have this new thing where we can have a big melting pot. It's still all very vague, but I mean, Flash and Arrow have been doing such a bang up job so far that I'm, you know, definitely willing to give these producers a bit of leeway and a bit of faith and see what they come up with.
Gary, any comment on that?
Oh yeah, no, I like the idea that they're going to make it a little bit different than the Flash and Arrow worlds, where it's mainly, well, even for Arrow, but still like a main single hero kind of thing. They've been introducing a lot of side characters, so to speak, and I have no problem with a sidekick show, if you want to call it that, which is the sense I get. So we'll see, but I think maybe they can mine something good. I mean, you look at how Guardians of the Galaxy did with what are admittedly second tier heroes, and so, you know, maybe that's sort of the mentality behind it, that they can, you know, take that and really run with it. So like at most comic book things, I'm willing to give it a try.
Yeah, it sounds fairly interesting to me, and it even sounds like they can do this kind of anthology type of series concept and go all over the timeline too, which may be the way that they're going to handle the whole Sarah Lance problem. But we shall see. We shall see. Edmund, I think you have a little bit of news about this is casting news, yes. But it's also the first time we've heard about the show that's actually being cast for.
Yeah, absolutely. And I got a little confused with this one because I thought I was about to give you casting news for Salem, which of course is about to return on WGN. But in fact, this is casting news for HBO's pilot, The Devil You Know, a Salem witch trial drama from the creator of Orange is the New Black, Genji Kohan. And the casting news was that Karen Gillan has managed to apparently to survive Selfie and will be joining the cast along with some. I see Eddie Izzard is in this. Ever Carradine, Damian Maloney. So I'm not quite sure what to. I am presuming that certainly, unlike the unabashedly and unapologetically over the top Salem, that perhaps they're going a little more historically accurate with this show, but investigating more the sort of the human dynamic and the hysteria, etc. But we shall have to see. They are filming it in Boston, appropriately, and slated to begin production this spring. So presumably sometime later this year, we will see what they've come up with.
It's certainly an interesting cast, and we'll see with HBO having maybe a little bit more leeway what they can do with the Salem Witch Trials. Who knows? Bronze Thumb, it sounds like we've got some news about Sherlock, but not what many people were expecting.
Oh, that's putting it mildly. So there's been a few promo photos and a few scattered reports about what Sherlock is doing with the I believe it's a Christmas special, not just a special that's gonna around that have already been released. Had Benedict Cumberbatch and Martin Freeman in very Victorian London garb, and people have speculated about what the hell's going on. Well, Stephen Moffat's finally confirmed that the Sherlock special will be soon. It's not a fancy dress party. It's not a weird cosplay mystery or anything like that. It's the special is its own thing. Stephen Moffat told reporters at South by Southwest, we wouldn't have done the story we're doing and the way we're doing it if we didn't have the special. It's not part of the run of three episodes. So we had this to do it, as we could hardly conceal. It's Victorian. Mark Gatiss and me, we wanted to do this, but it had to be a special. It had to be a separate entity on its own. It's kind of in its own little bubble. This sounds interesting, like a little Sherlock Elseworlds almost kind of thing, of taking the very... The modern cast of Sherlock and everything we sort of know and love back to its original setting. I think with Moffat and Gatiss have always done a fantastic job with the show, and specifically with the real modernization of it, that I'm very interested to see what happens when they take their sensibilities back to that that Victorian era. And I'm really looking forward to it. I think it's going to be one of the best episodes of the show to date. Not that there's a lot to choose from,
or a lot.
What do you guys think?
My first thought is that, boy, does this set the stage for them to do a crossover with Doctor Who, since they're establishing like you said, the Elseworlds version of the franchise. But I guess we'll find out. How about you, Gary?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I was thrilled to read this, actually. I'm a classic Holmes fan, and while I do enjoy the modern interpretations such as BBC Sherlock or even CBS's Elementary, I still harken back to the old days. So I was really thrilled to do this. I was a little disappointed to find out it looks like it's a one-off kind of thing that they probably won't repeat again, because I still think they could do wonders even in the Victorian age. And I wouldn't necessarily hold my breath for the Doctor Who thing, but regardless, I'm looking forward to seeing Mr. Cumberbatch in a Deerstalker cap, I believe.
That's the one.
You just may. Indeed. Yes. Edmund, how about you?
Yeah, no, I mean, it kind of intrigues me and amuses me, because I was always thought that when the Sherlock originally premiered around the same time as the Robert Downey Jr. Guy Ritchie Holmes films, that it was kind of intriguing that the modern adaptation often felt closer to the original Holmes than the Robert Downey Jr. films, and so I'm kind of intrigued to see them take that sensibility and actually do a more conventional take on Holmes and the Good Doctor.
Yeah, it would be interesting if they managed to completely, overshadow the Guy Ritchie films, and just with this special alone, that would be fairly amusing. Let's put it that way. All right, Gary, this is a completely different kind of return to the past.
Oh, yeah, and geez, I have to say, I almost, it was one of those things like, No, don't do that. when I first read about this upcoming movie story that they had, or at least, yeah, I believe it is a movie. But when I looked at some of the pedigrees, I was slightly less apprehensive, although the term JAFO just kept coming to mind. What I'm talking about, of course, is the movie Blue Thunder that originally starred Roy Scheider. It's a story about a man who is a police officer that gets basically an Apache attack helicopter to keep down terrorism and other riots or things like that in the city. I think it was Los Angeles, whether they actually said it or not, I forget. But regardless, Marvel Studios likes the idea, and they're going to bring it back. Not quite the way you're thinking, though. Eliminate helicopters, and let's bring in the drones. So they're going to redo it with drones, and as I said, the people behind this, as I started to hear about it, I was a little more enthused. The person behind it is the same person who's been producing the last two Thor movies, as well as will be producing and writing the next Thor movie. So he's done a pretty good job with that. His name is Craig Kyle, and he also does have comic book experience. He wrote a pretty good run on Marvel's X-Force comics, and also was shuffled over into the animation side of Marvel, doing Wolverine and X-Men and Ultimate Avengers. So he's pretty well-versed in comics, so I'm curious what he'll bring to this. I never really considered this a comic property, even though there were comic versions of the movie done. So we'll have to see. But, you know, it was sort of the plot where, you know, you have this high-tech device, and eventually it gets taken over by the bad guys, and the good guys managed to stop the bad guys from using the wonder tool for evil. So now we're, instead of helicopters, we're going over to those wonderful drones that seem to be getting licensed everywhere. So it's an interesting refresh on a very old property, but I might give it a shot. I really love the original source material. What do you guys think? How are drones going to play in this modern world?
Blue Thunder against Amazon? oh, Blue Thunder versus Airwolf.
Yeah.
There we go.
They were completely independent properties. I don't know what you're talking about.
It sounds interesting.
Even I don't believe that.
Yeah. No, Blue Thunder versus the USA Network version of Airwolf.
Oh,
ooh, yeah, there you go.
Thanks for bringing that back into my
life. Yeah, no problem.
It sounds like you guys just want more Airwolf.
It's called Airwolf. There were mullets. Come on.
I still prefer Blue Thunder.
No, I knew just from the name Airwolf that there were mullets in it.
Yeah, absolutely. If it wasn't an 80s metal hair band, then it was definitely an 80s action TV show franchise anyway. Edmund, this is perhaps better news for, you know, those who like quality anyway.
Not yes, well, we can hope so. As we know, there have been a number of Scandinavian properties that have been adapted over the last few years, and A&E is getting into the act themselves. They are adapting wait a minute, Let the Right One In as a television pilot. Of course, it was originally of a Swedish film in 2008. There was an English language movie done, Let Me In 2010. And it's still in the development stages. They're working on adapting the story. And actually is kind of right in line with what A&E has been doing in adapting other films for TV series. Bates Motel, of course, from Psycho, and The Returned from The Returned. That's all we have to go on for now. Given the fact this was a movie that was actually based on a novel, I think there is probably quite a bit of material that hasn't been covered yet that they can use to stretch this out into series form.
Now, I didn't see the article. Is Carlton Cuse also going to be behind this one? Is A&E just basically giving him every show that they have coming out? Is that the way this works?
Yeah, that, at the moment, his name is not being attached, but then again, it is still in development stages. So who knows as they get closer to filming?
Indeed. Well, we can all look forward to the days of when it's not Scandinavia that we need to think about, but rather our good friends from the American Revolution. You know, back in the day when we knew everyone from Franklin to Washington to Jefferson to, well, I could keep going on, but I won't have to because there's going to be a third season of Sleepy Hollow.
Get out!
No.
Oh, okay.
I don't want to.
Okay, you can stay. Just tell me more.
They're not
about
getting out. That's why.
That's the point.
The
exactly. Yes, they get to stay. Of course, not everyone gets to stay. Fox was infamously retooling the show, and it was apparent in the second half of this second season in that it was a little more episodic than it was serialized. That's certainly likely to continue into the third season. They have replaced the showrunner with Clifton Campbell, who is known for The Glades and White Collar. I don't know what that combination has in store.
I like one of those shows.
Yeah.
And the other one's about supernatural things, I think.
Oh, there you go. It's a mixture. That's maybe perfect then. Of course,
Ichabod Crane moves to the city and becomes a con man.
And grouses
it's
over
a bit
the modern
state
of
cons. It's a big retool.
What is this con of which you speak?
It's a new jazz theme tune. And
you call that a ruse. Anyway, we know that there are definitely changes going on to the status quo. There was a huge amount of wrap up at the end of the second season, but it certainly left things open for new and exciting evil in the third season. So yes. I'm looking forward to it. As everyone knows, I'm a big fan of at least the Ichabod Crane character. I'm not so sure about everyone else on the cast, but Lieutenant will be, of course, much appreciated, I'm sure. Any thoughts on that, Edmund, Gary, other than just agog, aghast, perhaps?
Not in this article, but other articles I've read, it was interesting how there was pretty much a fairly open acknowledgement by the Fox executives that the show really did go off the rails this season. So, and I think one of the things that the way they were pushing, particularly the Katrina relationship, kind of messing with the with that core chemistry between Ichabod and the lieutenant. I think they've acknowledged that wasn't really the right way to go. Not that they're gonna. I mean, I certainly hope they don't go the route of actually getting them romantically involved, because that's been one of the joys of the first.
Don't call it House 13.
Exactly.
No.
Yeah.
No.
You know. But it does sound like they are going to try and get back to what was actually working in the first season, and so I'm looking forward to it.
I just want to see Ichabod take it to some more online trolls this season.
Yes.
Who is this Bronze Thumb? Anyway, speaking of, a few classics here, we've talked about, Sherlock. We've talked about some revolutionary figures. Now we've got some other figures from the past that we might be seeing on the airwaves. Although, given the network involved, I'm not sure what to think. Edmund, maybe you can kind of...
Yes. Fox has also acquired 10 episodes of a series called Houdini and Doyle, as in Harry and Sir Arthur Conan. This is a co-production, actually from the UK and Canada, co-created by David Shore, who created, of course, House over at Fox. It basically imagines Houdini and Doyle teaming up to solve crimes. So this is a case of where it's already a done deal. It's already being made and going to be shown in the UK and Canada, and Fox is just picking up the rights to show it here, similar to what NBC did last summer with Crossbones. And I'm rather intrigued by this concept. So I will certainly be watching, and part of me though does wonder if it actually takes off and continues. Will there be the inevitable falling out? Since, of course, Doyle got very heavily into spiritualism, which Houdini, of course, worked to debunk heavily in the latter part of his life. But presumably, this is at least going to start in earlier on when they were still friends.
I saw this In the news list, I saw that the title of the article, Fox picks up scripted series Houdini and Doyle. And after a moment, I realized, wait, that Houdini and Doyle? Oh, good. This is what? Don't tell me. They solve crimes? And I click on Luke's like, are you kidding me? Good Lord. This sounds like someone just took a bloody plot generator. They Googled plot generator and picked the first thing that came out. He's a backwards talking fish. A Catholic saint, Harry Houdini, and the other one is it's a talking rabbit. No, it's Arthur Conan Doyle. Yes, and they solve crime. Sure, whatever. Green light.
I'm waiting for the inevitable moment in the second or third season when the show is really just going way off its rocker, and you've got Sir Arthur Conan Doyle starts getting into spiritualism, and you know, Harry looks over at Artie and goes, "Artie, come on!" Wah, wah.
I was hoping they were going to be ghost hunters. Was what I was hoping, but no such luck.
Oh, like the Brothers Grimm film?
Like
that's a different
maybe
thing.
Maybe they
though.
Opened like a pizzeria or a.
A teacher. There you go. It's the Odd Couple.
Houdini and Doyle, cobblers.
the Odd Couple meets Fawlty Towers. Is that where we're going with this?
And one of them's constantly complaining about there's ghosts in the upstairs room and getting out of handcuffs all the time and like back talking police about how to solve crimes and.
Oh, it's Pinky and the Brain, adapted for that's what it's going to be. I knew it. There you go. yes, so not that I was trying to lead into this just a little bit, Gary, but our final piece of news here.
Yes, to keep on this historical bent, I guess. It's recently been announced that Transformer writer Aaron Kruger is going to adapt the Brothers Grimm movie for the television screen. Now, before we flip out and go too crazy, he actually is the writer of the original movie. So I guess if they want to stay true to the movie, what better person to get than the actual writer of the movie himself? They plan to build on the original film and follow the adventures of the Grimm brothers as they discover supernatural creatures plaguing 19th century Europe. Because good gosh, there's not enough supernatural on TV. And we need more... more Grimms, because the television schedule people love scheduling TV shows with the same names. So we'll have to see what they call this, and I guess it probably will be the Brothers Grimm, but we'll have to take a look. It is, it does follow some other more recent movie to TV shows, such as 12 Monkeys or even Fox's upcoming Minority Report. So this seems to be the trend to take movies and make TV shows. It's not really a new concept, but I don't think we've seen it in mass in a while.
Yeah, I the first thought that I had was that Grimm's on NBC already. Do we really need this? But I guess another take on it is fine.
Well, wouldn't that be great if they tied it together and that was like back in the 19th century?
Yeah, wrong. Have they set a network? I didn't see. If it's NBC, you never know.
No, I'm trying to think. I don't think they have. Although I think they said it was being made through Miramax, which is a... somehow an own Disney company, if I recall correctly. So I imagine this is coming either going to be ABC or I forget where ABC throws their cable shows typically.
ABC Family, maybe?
But I doubt Brothers Grimm.
Yeah. Oh, why not? Come on.
Although that'd be interesting if that's the take they go on it. But
right after Pretty Little Liars.
But it wouldn't surprise me. Maybe they are going to gear this for ABC. Who knows? They did try to follow up Once Upon a Time with even though that didn't work out. So maybe they want another sort of sister show to that. So they're going to go this route.
You never know. You never know. Well, that was all that we had for news this week. I believe that we are a little bit short on this show, but that's okay. We can go ahead and get started with after this break. The best shows, or the highest scored shows anyway, of the week. Changing things up a little bit. Stay tuned.
Luxuries and great beer, rap, or grenades.
Okay, well, as promised, we're going to go ahead and get right into the top three of the week. Now, technically, this is a top four, but one of them was a show that only I watch, so it didn't seem fair when there are three other shows that are right there at the top of the list that have at least two of us watching it, so it seemed like a natural way to go. But we are going to start off here with our number three show for the week, and that would be Black Sails, and here's the promo.
The only way to ensure that the Urca gold doesn't return here is to eliminate everyone with the knowledge of where it is and how to retrieve it.
If anyone even remotely suspected something was off about our story, we would all be dead men. No one's asking questions. No one knows shit.
Something else lies at the end of this road. Judgment.
Black Sails. Watch an all-new episode Saturday at 9 or catch up anytime with Stars on Demand or Stars Play.
All right, and this is Black Sails, Season 2, Episode 8, 16. Flint and Miranda prepare for a tough go of it. Silver becomes enlightened. Eleanor learns Max's secret, and Vane makes a move. Well, that's one way of putting it. And this comes in at an average of 8.33, so well above average here. And let's see, Edmund, you and I give it an 8, and Bronstam, you gave it a 9. Now, Bronstam, you haven't had a chance to really talk about this show with us this season, so a 9, huh? What was it that made it an exceptional episode for you?
It's definitely riding high. This has been a fantastic. I'm really out of practice at this. I think the show has just been on a really fantastic run. I mean, this feels like the first time in a while I've gotten a chance to actually talk about an episode or anything. But I'm not quite sure where to start. I guess just the fact that it was. Consistently surprising, consistently able to
leave.
Yeah,
you,
I know.
Leave
really,
you
I'm,
with.
I really leave me speechless. Apparently, no. Yes. The first I was liking the first few episodes of the season, and then somewhere like 4 or 5 episodes in, there was this turn, and suddenly I haven't been able to see coming where the show has gone. The things I expected to go badly went well. The things I expected to go well went badly. Characters are able to surprise me and at the same time be just incredibly consistent. And this episode just it really continued that trend. It didn't have to be super violent. It didn't have to rely on creative swearing or nudity or anything like that. It was just such strong writing, such strong performances, that right up to the end, I was on the edge of my seat. I didn't know where it was going next, and I had that feeling you get at the end of every of good episodes of TV, where it's just like, I want the next one. I want it now. Like, not that I didn't love the first season, but this one feel like it's really kicked it up a notch.
Yeah, Edmund, what would you add to that, do you think? I mean, for me, I know that the ending was really shocking to, and a big surprise, but like Bronson, like you were saying, just the fact that things with Flint and Miranda went a little bit better than I thought they would.
Yeah, definitely. Well, Bronstam was away, of course. You know, we had the, I mean, our 9 episode, you know, when we finally got the Flint backstory, and then we, you know, it seemed to that next episode slipped a little bit, but since then, I mean, they've just been keeping the story driving forward, and certainly other than catching on about the same time as Rackham did, that you all think Vane's in there, but I don't think he is anymore. that whole twist and certainly, you know, it was an ending that, as Ron Sam said, despite not being sort of, you know, in your face violent, was perhaps even more shocking and gruesome, just for just showing you that tableau and letting you imagine just how horrific the scene had been leading up to that. I was actually quite rather pleasantly surprised that they did push all the way through, you know, to Charleston. I was kind of expecting them to, you know, to get there and then leave the leave us hanging in terms of what the reception was going to actually be, but certainly that felt like the final not final but you know the culmination of that whole of the whole storyline and backstory that we've been introduced to a few episodes ago. Flynn trying to make good on his promise to reform NASA, but as ever, this persona he has created in the meantime getting in the way of that.
Just a little. Yeah, I mean, it was just another really good episode this season. And like you were saying, Bronstom, it's hard to know where exactly it's going to go from here, but it's inching closer.
Which is saying something, given that it's that half the characters are from Treasure Island and not the other half of the characters are real people.
Exactly. Yes. It's like the plot should be predictable, yet not quite. All right, well, then completely different kind of show came in our second place here, and that would be The Flash. And here's the promo for that episode.
You have shown me what it's like to have a son.
Dr. Wells had something to do with Barry's mom's murder.
He's in a wheelchair. How could he possibly have done that?
The Flash returns with an all-new episode Tuesday, March 17th on the CW.
Yes, this is The Flash, Season 1, Episode 15, Out of Time. The Weather Wizard appears in Central City to avenge his brother's death and targets Joe, who shot the man. Meanwhile, Cisco recalls the night when the team captured the Reverse Flash and realizes something doesn't add up, and Barry and Linda go on an awkward double date with Eddie and Iris. Oh, that doesn't even begin. This episode came in at an 8.9, which is actually quite high, and it would probably have been our number one show without a doubt if Henry hadn't given it just a half point less than everyone else. Damn it, Henry. Anyway, this was by far one of the most scored episodes of the week, let's put it that way, if not the most scored, and certainly one of the most popular episodes of The Flash. And Gary, I really want to get your opinion on this one, considering just how much happened.
Holy heck, my gosh, I can't believe all this stuff that they packed into one episode. Here I was expecting
You should be watching Arrow, dude.
I did. We might not discuss it for the next few shows, but I'm up on that as well. Anyway, another Spartacus alumni to, you know, give us a decent Villain of the Week show, but I got so much more than that. I guess we could talk about the whole Villain of the Week first. I will just use the term Spartacus, even though other people could use other names. Anyway, Spartacus came in with weather powers to target Joe to kill him because he had shot his brother. Meanwhile, of course, we later find out too that his brother had killed Joe's original partner. So there was not only animosity on Joe's part. So both of them had sort of a money in the game that they both wanted to take each other out for very strong reasons. So you had that whole tension. And then I guess we could go to the, not ludicrous, but I guess slightly lighter issue of Barry going on a double date with Linda to go bowl, something that he always loves to do. And then we find out that Iris is there with Eddie because she loves to bowl. And that's something she loves to do all the time too, because Barry and Iris used to bowl together. So the awkwardness slightly ensues, and you know, basically both of the other people in this quadrangle sort of realize that Barry and Iris there's something going on, and they both feel like third wheels in their relationships, and pretty much say so to Barry and Iris respectively. At that point, I guess we'll keep it sort of light and personal, where we find out that now Iris, comes forth and sort of lays things out for Barry. Barry lays things out for Iris, and all of a sudden there's fireworks. Oh, isn't that lovely? Okay, so the villain gets captured. Barry and Iris get together. Hey, that was a good show, wasn't it? No, hold on. There's even more. But instead of me monopolizing the conversation, who wants to pick up and give us the part two of this one show?
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'll keep going, but sometimes the listeners might want somebody else, so I'll chime in afterwards. I promise. But
the thing that strikes me, like getting to the end of the episode and thinking about what they've essentially set up for next week, is one of the most interesting takes on a TV show time travel story I've ever seen. Because one of the common things about a time travel thing is that there's a whole set right what once went wrong sort of thing. Like something bad happens, and then you go back in time and you get the chance to stop it. Barry's gone back in time. He's got the opportunity to stop this bad thing that happened, but he doesn't know it happened.
Yeah.
It's just the this episode was for the most part, I thought some of the Barry Iris stuff was a bit less than good. But for the most part, this episode was a masterclass in doing exposition and setup at the same time as good dramatic content. And most of all, it was just great about just building the tension, especially all the stuff with Wells, just very, very much being in Caitlin and Cisco's shoes, just trying to get to the bottom of what's going on, wanting them to succeed, and just sort of seeing the wheels start to turn in Wells' head, and that moment where Caitlin turns around and he's gone, and just the wheelchair's there. It's just like you have the oh no, but it can't be as bad as I think it's going to be. It just the whole build up, the performances were great. I thought. Tom Cavanaugh, I never would have picked this for this actor and everything else I'd seen him in, but he's really good at being really creepy, and coming across as that peculiar kind of reluctant dangerous. It's just like, I don't want to hurt you, but I'll totally hurt you. the actor who plays Cisco, this is easily the best he's ever been in the show. The usual, I don't know, his usual kind of juvenile quality. He seems like the role seems like it might have originally been written for like a kid sidekick kind of thing, just from the way that some of the lines come off and the way that that actor plays has played it over the course of the show. And he's never been one of my favorite. He's easily been my least favorite character of the main ensemble, but they totally played that up here with this confrontation in which he just sort of breaks down as he realizes what's going to happen. It's just this very childlike reaction, this very childlike performance in the best way possible. It just really amps up. No matter how much you didn't like Cisco running up to that moment, you totally feel for him then. I don't think Wells would have gotten – I don't think we would have had as big a reaction to Wells if he'd done that to a puppy.
He basically did. I mean, that was the look he had on his face. Was like, no, please. And it was like, nope, sorry. Let me rip out your heart. And by you, I mean the audience. It was definitely surprising. Now, Gary, I am going to still have to come back to you when we're done getting Edmund's opinion, because I need some more background. But Edmund, okay. I need you to weigh in as well here.
Yeah. I know I think you actually mentioned this in your review, but it was something that I was feeling. There was that whole sense of, you know, with all of the reveals with Wells sort of outing himself, killing Cisco, and certainly the Barry Iris stuff seemingly getting together and him having to actually reveal himself as the Flash. I mean, there was that sense of is this the season finale, and realizing that no, it's only 15 episodes in, even though at the end there was, I think that, you know, there was that slight feeling of disappointment that, oh, and you're going time travel, so how much of this is actually going to going to hold up?
The way they've played the time travel is that they've set up that there's no way that he can. There's no perfect outcome to this time travel.
Yeah.
For everything he might be able to fix or stop, there's another thing that's going to go wrong in another way.
Yes.
So pulling the trigger on things like, you know, Barry and Iris and her finding out the Flash and stuff like that, it's like you need to throw things like that into the mix so that Barry's got to make a choice. It's like, okay, what things of what happened do I preserve and what do I change? On top of the fact that there are things that he would definitely want to change if he knew that they happened, but he doesn't.
Yeah, exactly, and certainly adding that element of, you know, okay, this thing that he really wanted to happen just happened, so I'm very interested to see because certainly you know in the hands of a different writing team, I'd be a little more trepidatious and dismayed at, like, you know, oh no, you're just going to reset it, but with this crew, I'm very intrigued to see exactly how they let this play out, and we've got certainly a few episodes to presumably. For them to play with this.
Yeah, I would say so. And like, so Gary, like I said, just to close out our show tonight, I was hoping you could give us a little bit of background on what Wells, he gave a real name, and what does that mean for anyone who is not familiar with the DC canon?
Well, there's been a few reverse Flashes over the years, but this is what you would consider to be the original Flash. I always never quite get this name right, but it's Eobard Thawne, much like Eddie Thawne, as he mentions that he's a distant relative, which is interesting because a lot of people had the theory with Eddie's name as Thawne, especially beginning with an E, that he would be the reverse Flash. But I guess we were at a little bait, you know, the other way around. Obviously, that's not the case. And, you know, basically, it fits with everything they've shown us because the original reverse Flash, Thawne, found one of Barry's old costumes, was able to put a device on it, like that tachyon thing that they did on the show. And then when he wears the costume, he would get the powers. they followed much closer than we thought, and they really, in a sense, by going with the obvious, you know, fooled a bunch of us because we were never quite sure, at least initially, till they revealed it. But so it does make that sort of thing. But he was supposed to be, you know, he was supposed to be a criminal back in the past, in the future, and he came back to the past, and after he'd gotten these speed powers, that part of it fits. This whole thing about needing to get Barry ready, which Wells keeps talking about, or Thawne, or I guess we'll still use Wells for this case, starts talking about, that was something that came up with one of the later people who became the Reverse Flash. So they are merging sort of two different individuals to come up with Wells' storyline.
Okay. Yeah, I was a little bit confused myself, but it does make sense that they would maybe throw some misdirection in there with the names and stuff like that. All right, well, I mean, certainly The Flash was a big episode this time. I think we were all quite pleased with that one. When we come back next episode, we're going to have our top show for the week and then proceed from there. So until next time.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google Plus, under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates, but let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time. Watch, read, and listen, and believe in the critical myth.